Parshas Vayishlach, we're going to start Parak Lamed Hey Pasuk Beis. So the truth is, everything that happens up until now, I think everybody knows, the whole story about Yaakovinu going to meet Esav and the 400 men and everything that happens afterward, this is the point where he had already fought against Shechem, or I should say Shimon and Levi had fought against Shechem and destroyed the city completely. And then he sees the Shvatim and he talks to the Shvatim and he tells them, in Pasuk Beis, after Hashem tells him to go into Eretz Yisrael, it's time to go to Eretz Yisrael, he says, Vayomer Yaakov Beis Avol Kol Asher Imo. Yaakov said to his household and everybody that was with him, Hasirus Elohei Asher B'Solchem, take away the strange gods that you have amongst you. V'taharu, become pure, V'achlifu Simloseichem, and change your clothing. So there's 3 points here that he's trying to get them on. Number one, remove the gods from among you, as if the Shvatim were worshiping Avodah Zarah. That's number one. Number two, become pure, to make yourselves tahor, as if they had become tameh from something, which I guess could be from the dead bodies that they had in Shechem. And then changing your clothing. What's going on with the change of the clothing? Why all three of them? And what are we trying to get out from all of this over here? So number one, just to get this out of the way, there is no way that it could be that these Shvatim were worshiping idols. It's one thing to say that, listen, I guess in Pshat you could say that the Shvatim were not exactly old enough yet and that they were doing something wrong, but it seems extremely strange that with everything that we know about the Shvatim and how holy these people were, that all of a sudden they were doing idol worship. And if they were, you'd think that everybody would harp on this pasuk. They'd say like, see, look, the Shvatim were doing evil things and Yaakovinu had to tell them to stop doing it. So it seems pretty obvious that this shows you that there must not be anything wrong since we don't talk about it in that way. Now Rashi says that the strange gods were items that they picked up in the spoils of Shechem. They had destroyed the city of Shechem. There was spoils there. They grabbed some of the stuff out of there, and they had to purify and change their clothing because it's possible they had clothing and other items that belonged to idol worship that they were dealing with Avodah Zarah, and that's the idea. That very well could be what Targum Unkelus is talking about. Unkelus says, he calls it Ta'avas Amemaya. Ta'avas Amemaya is the mistakes of the other nations, referring to this Avodah Zarah, that there was idols that they had taken from the other nations. Not that they were using them, but rather they had gotten them, and they took them because they were so good looking, because of all the, they could think of meltdown the gold and keep the gold for themselves, melt down the silver and take the silver for themselves. The Rashbam and the Chizkuni say it as well. He wanted everybody to know that when we went to Eretz Yisrael, nobody could mistake their service of Hashem with anything else. If they were wearing or using any of the items that they had taken from Shechem, people might think that it was some sort of like partnership where they believed in God, but they also believed in these idols as well. He wanted to take away everything that was there. And the Radak says it a little bit differently. There were items like cups and plates that had pictures of the sun and the moon on it. And of course, these people back then used to worship the sun and the moon and the stars and everything like that. Since they had pictures on them, even if they weren't planning on serving them, they wanted to melt it all down and get rid of it. Yaakov didn't want to stay as far away from that as possible. So nonetheless, even though it's clear that there were some Elohei Nechor there, it wasn't that the Shvatim were actually using it. It's rather that they wanted the stuff that it was on. And Yaakov's like, forget about this stuff. We don't need that gold. We don't need that silver. Get rid of it completely. We don't want to deal with it whatsoever. Ibn Ezra says a great line. He used the word Chalila twice. Chalila, Chalila, he says, that these holy men could possibly have had anything with them that would even have a small chance of being Avodah Zarah. If there was even a chance that this was used for idol worship, there's no way the Shvatim would have taken it, he says. There's no way that could have happened. So that's not pshat. So he says, and it's really in Parsh Vayelech, that there's ways that they worshipped God that was foreign to the Jews. In other words, they had their own method of worshipping God. It wasn't that there was idol worship involved. They were worshiping Hashem. They really believed in one God that was in charge, but they served him in their own manner and said, Yaakovinu, that's not what we do. We don't do it that way. And therefore, it wasn't Elohei Anechor, as in gods that were strange, but rather the God in a strange way. Serving God in a strange way. That's what he said, I want to stay away from. Rav Hirsch, really, and the Ksav HaKabbalah also says, this is not an adjective where it's the strange gods that they were worshiping over here. That's not what it refers to. It's an abstract noun for those who are linguists. I guess you can call it that way. He calls it, it's the realm of foreignness, the non-Jewish world at large. He wanted to be separate from everyone so that no one could think that he has any shaykhis to these types of nations that are around there. So he stayed as far away from them as possible. And therefore, it's not Nechor is referring to the Elohim. That would be Elohim Necharim, these strange gods, plural, that would be referring to over here. Elohe HaNechor refers instead to a nation. There was an actual nation out there that were known as the Nechar people. And Elohe HaNechor meant the gods of that people or what they did with it. That's the idea. It was a foreign idea. It's a foreignness idea of something that was a little bit away from them. That's the idea that Rav Hirsch, the Ibn Ezra, and the Ksav HaKabbalah says. However, there's another thing. So here's the deal with the idol worship. When a person worships idols, if a Jew would worship an idol, if I would go ahead and I would take something that belongs to me, not something that belongs to somebody else, but I would take my phone, as most people, I would say, would consider this almost like a god to them, and they go ahead and they say, this is my god and I will glorify it. And they go ahead and they bow down to it. If a Jew does that, there is nothing you can do to that item to save the item. The item is automatically usher, it's forbidden from that point on, and it has the status of avodah zarah. Nothing I can do to be able to take care of that. If, however, a non-Jew does it, if a non-Jew, somebody who's not Jewish, takes an item that belongs to him and serves it as a god, whatever it is, then there's two things that he could do in order to get rid of that avodah zarah. If the non-Jew either is mevatel the avodah zarah by showing that it has no chashivas, basically leaving in the dust and saying, forget about this, I don't need this anymore, and he walks away to something else, or if possibly you could, there's another way of doing it in which you take the item and knock it off a little bit, cut off a little bit on the side, that if you cut off a little bit and turn it to the side a little bit, then all of a sudden it loses its chashivas, it's no longer consider avodah zarah. That is called bittul, being nullified by a non-Jew. Says the Sforno, there is no question that the Shvatim went ahead and nullified every single item that they found. There was not one thing that they saw that they couldn't nullify, and they took the non-Jews in Shechem and they made them nullify their idols, destroy their idols and whatever it was, break apart some of it or something like that. So technically it was allowed to keep these things. There was no problem with allowing these things to be in Klal Yisrael's hands. But Yaakov Avinu said to his kids, I don't want any of this. I don't want anything that even once was in avodah zarah. I don't care that it's batel. I don't care that it's mutter for you guys to have. I don't want you to be makel or being matter or something. I want you to get rid of everything. The Helein Echor, anything that was once used as an item that was once used for avodah zarah, get rid of it completely, even if it's mutter for you to use nowadays. The Ramban says it makes so much sense. What did they do with this Elohein Echor? So the next pasuk says, Yaakov Avinu buried them under an oak tree by the area of Shechem. He buried them under an oak tree there. There were many people later on who worshipped that area because of all the avodah zarah that Yaakov Avinu hid by that tree. It was a scary place where people went around. Says the Ramban, that's not what you do with avodah zarah. What are you supposed to do with avodah zarah? If something is really avodah zarah, what would you do with it? You have to throw it, not in the Yam Suf, but in the Yam HaMelech. Destroy it with salt or burn it or crush it until it's dust and there's absolutely nothing left. That's what you have to do. You're not allowed to leave it around. You can't just bury avodah zarah. You got to get rid of avodah zarah. Crush it until it's nothing. Get rid of it completely. Says the Ramban, since he only buried these items, that's all he did. He didn't crush them. He didn't destroy them. He didn't do anything. Says the Ramban, it shows that these items were not really avodah zarah. If they were really avodah zarah, he wouldn't have done that. He would have done more. Since he only buried them, must be that they were perfectly fine, that nobody would get any benefit from them because he put them in the ground, but it wasn't that this was actual avodah zarah. Says Rav Yehuda Bechaya, not a proof whatsoever. Looks at the Ramban and says, it's not a proof. Just because they buried them, you know why they buried them? Because they were afraid out of their minds. They had just destroyed an entire city of Shechem. They had just killed 684 people, according to the Medrash. According to another Medrash, 24,000. But they had killed an entire city. They were worried that people were going to come from around and destroy them. They were trying to get out of that area as quickly as possible. So they said, yeah, really, we should go to Yam HaMelech. Really, we should go and crush these things until they're destroyed. We should go ahead and burn them until they're gone. But they didn't want to leave any message that they were there. They immediately left, and in order to get rid of the avodah zarah in the most expedient way possible, they buried the avodah zarah. So it's possible it still was avodah zarah. He said, I'm not arguing, says Rabbi Abchaya, it probably wasn't avodah zarah, but there's no proof that that's the reason why it was considered already batel, because maybe the reason why they did it is just simply put, that's there. Tiferes Yonason says, it makes so much sense that the kalim that were there were just beautiful kalim, that they could be used as avodah zarah, but they weren't actual avodah zarah. He goes out about bittul barov, Tov and etc. You can look it up yourself in the Tiferes Tzionos and over there. But Rav Schwab says something different, and I think it makes more sense this way also. He's not talking to the Shvatim. He's not going up to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi and saying that. He's talking, and here's the wording of the pasuk. If you look on that first page, it says, El Beso Del Kol Asher Imo. He was speaking to his household and everybody with him. The Shvatim might have been included in that, but they didn't take any Avodah Zarah, but they had taken ladies, women, and children from the city of Shechem. They killed the inhabitants of Shechem, the men they had killed. Some of the women they killed, but they took the woman and the children out. The woman and children had Avodah Zarah with them. So Yaakov Avinu turned to his household and said, get rid of all of the Haloi Nechor that these people may have hidden with them. They might have taken with them on the way out. Says Rav Schwab, he's talking to them. They might have had mementos of their previous lives, reminders of who their gods were. Said Yaakov Avinu, get rid of them. We don't want to have any of that brought into Eretz Yisrael. The Midrash Sechar Tov says, that's why it says Bisokhechem. It's spelled without the vav to indicate that Yaakov was not talking to the people that were his own shvatim, his own kids. He wasn't suspecting his kids of doing this. But the other people that were with them was the problem. What's up?
What about with Rachel and the Trachman?
That's a great call. That's a great call. You see the concept where they wanted to get rid of Avodah Zarah, and maybe they held the Avodah Zarah with them in order to get rid of it. But I think it's a little bit different. Rachel Imenu knew they had to run and grab the Avodah Zarah as quickly as he could and put it underneath her, right, in order to make sure that they could just run, get out of there, and get it away from Lavan. So that's why she ended up doing it. Here, they had, when they were in the cities, they could have left the Avodah Zarah in the cities. You're not worried about somebody worshiping it anymore. It's gone. Everybody's gone in the city. So you'd think that if it was the Shvatim themselves, right, who had done something, they would have just left it there instead of taking it. Now, the Or HaChaim says that it's more. Maybe there was stuff that they didn't know about. Maybe Shechem had stuff like where they had like a beautiful bottle or a beautiful vase, and inside the vase was a little bit of Avodah Zarah that the Shvatim didn't even know about. Said Yaakov, you know, I want you to look into your stuff and not just take the Avodah Zarah. Look around. Do you see anything that might possibly be even a thought of Avodah Zarah? Well, if you look inside it, you'll see a little part. Maybe you're going to see something that also could have been Avodah Zarah. That's the problem with what it is. Maybe there's something that you touched that could make you into Avodah Zarah. That's what you have to be worried about over here. And since you said maybe they were Mevatel, the people that they had taken out of Shechem were probably too young to even know how to be Mevatel something. Maybe there wasn't anything that you could do. So that's what the Or HaChaim says. Look for everything. Look at the clothing. Look at the kalim. Look at everything you brought out. Is everything okay when it comes to this? Then Tziv talks about this as well. Then Tziv goes into this, but that's something else. But still, why wouldn't Yaakov Avinu have thought of this before? They destroyed the city of Shechem, and a couple days had passed, at least a couple days, before he got this nevuah from Hashem to go to Eretz Yisrael. So once he got the nevuah, then he says, guys, get rid of all the Avodah Zarah. That's what he should have said the first thing that he saw them. When they left the city of Shechem, he should have said to them, why do you guys have Avodah Zarah with you? Get rid of everything. Make sure you don't have any Avodah Zarah. That should be the first thing you tell them. Why was there a possible issue that you weren't worried about before that? So understand this. It goes like this. Let's say a person is sitting on a level where he has an issue with breaking Shabbos. Let's say that's an issue. He has an issue with eating at McDonald's. Let's say that's an issue that a person has and he's going through it. So at that point, his bechira, his level of bechira is, well, I can either choose to turn on this light or not turn on this light, right? My level of bechira would be, should I eat at this place? Should I not eat this place? Should I take this food? Should I not take that food? That's the level of bechira that he's on. That's the level that he's at right at that moment. But for many people here, your level of bechira is beyond that. You don't have a question of eating at McDonald's. You don't have a problem with turning off lights on Shabbos. You're beyond that level. So does that mean that you don't get the mitzvah of turning off a light, of not turning off a light on Shabbos? Do you not get the mitzvah of keeping kosher by not eating at McDonald's? Of course you do. But it's a different level. You're now on the level where you're above that. You're not there anymore. You brought yourself to a different level. Now, it's not a question of McDonald's. It's a question of, should I have that Chol of Yisrael milk or should I have the Chol of Stam? That became the level that you're on. Or on Shabbos, is this an issue of Borer or is it not an issue of Borer? It's different issues, different levels. And as you go up in life, right, if you grow and grow and grow and grow, eventually come to the level of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Is there a shemetz of gaiva in me doing my chumras or is there not no gaiva when I'm doing my chumras? As time goes on, you're beyond your level. You're growing and growing and growing and allowing these levels to go down. Unfortunately, it goes the other way as well. Some people have lost their bechira and it's not even a choice anymore. I have to do this because I can't even choose to do good in this case. There's nothing else I can do. Unfortunately, that happens to many people as well. The Igret Akala, the Bnei Yisachar, the Rebbe Midunov, he got up and he said, when a person is on a higher madrega, he's judged on a higher spot than what he was before. Down on this level, right, for him, drinking Chol of Yisrael milk is not the issue. So if he drinks Chol of Stam, he's not judged for that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't look at him like, oh man, he used the Eruv. He's barely keeping Shabbos. What does that mean? That's not the level that he's being judged at. He's being judged where he is, and that's that. But when he gets to the next level and he's beyond that, it's a new judgment. We look back at him and we say, well, wait a second. Now that you're above that, I think you should be a little bit better than that. It's a brand new judgment that comes in. And not only that, you're judged for what you might have done before. Every Yom Kippur, as you become greater and as you grow in what you're trying to do and where you're trying to go, every year you re-look at your past and you say, yeah, but look who I am now. Back then, that might not have been on my level and I might not have been good enough to do that. But now, look at me. Well, really, shouldn't I have gone to Minyan back then? Shouldn't I have worked on myself to make sure that I was on time for Shacharis? Those are the types of things that go back. You get rejudged, so to speak. Says the Igret Akala, when Yaakov Avinu was looking up in Yisrael, he's saying, we're living outside of Eretz Yisrael. We're living outside of Eretz Canaan right now. We're not yet inside the holy land of Eretz Canaan. At that point, these vessels, which they had been mevatel, they took care of the Avodah Zarah about it. It wasn't exactly Avodah Zarah. Were not issues. The fact that the Shvatim had them was not a problem. Because for them, on their level, it wasn't an issue. But when Hashem told them it's time to go to Eretz Yisrael, it's time to raise yourself. And the wording of Hashem is Aleh, to go up to Eretz Yisrael. It's time for you to be on a different madrig, on a different level. Yaakov Avinu turned to the Shvatim and said, now you got to get rid of the stuff that you have. We're expected to be on a higher level now. Back then, I mean, where we are now, we weren't yet ready for this. Now we're ready. Now it's time to remove the Elohei Nechor Asher B'Silchachem. So it didn't mean that they actually had Avodah Zarah. They had things which, on that level, it wasn't a problem. On the level now, it is a problem. Now you have to get rid of it. Now you have to do something about it. That's the concept, he says, of what it means. And this really is a lesson for all of us. This lesson is now a lesson that we can take for all time. Where am I holding? And what am I doing? And does that affect my past? Do I have to start thinking about what I might have done in the past and what I might have done? Should I have done better? Should I work on myself a little bit more? Should I do tshuva on something which at the time wasn't that big of a deal? But now I think, you know what? I'm better than that. I could have done better than that. That's the way that a person has to be. Says the Igret Akala, that's exactly what a person has to start thinking. What level am I on? What level should I be at? And when I get there, what am I going to do? That's the idea behind Hasiru Mitochachem. Hasiru Elohei Nechor Mitochachem. Get rid of those evil gods, those strange gods from among you. The Kliyukr, the Malbim, and the Tiferes Shlomo, the Radomsker, all say the exact same vort. Strange. I mean, those three Svarim are very different from one another. But they say that this whole thing was not literal. It doesn't mean get rid of the Avodah Zarah. They didn't have Avodah Zarah on them. There was nothing like that. It means get rid of those thoughts. It's a spiritual idea. Get Avodah Zarah out of your system. Get that type of idea, that thought process, that you're so great, etc. You're going to Eretz Yisrael now. You're going to be with your grandfather, Yitzchak Avinu. Yitzchak Avinu is going to be living there. You're going to see a man, a holy man, who is willing to sacrifice himself to God. A person who's never left Eretz Canaan. A man who is Avraham Avinu's child. You're going to meet a person of that stature. Up until now, your Zaidi was Lavan. Your Zaidi was a crook and a used car salesman. No offense to used car salesmen. I'm sure they're really great people, but I'm dealing with used cars right now. I hate them. So that's what you're dealing with. That's who Levin was. In another way, look what this guy is. You're going to see Yitzchak Avinu. You're going to have to get rid of the thought process of your head. Think in a different way. In Shabbos Kuf Hei, it mentions that El Zor, a strange god, is a reference to the Yetzer Hara. Get rid of your Yetzer Hara. It's time to stop thinking that way. The Malbush of Chet, the clothing that you're wearing that is surrounded with Chet, etc. You have to have a different mindset when entering into this land. I wish this were true nowadays. It's a very, very different level where now we go to Eretz Yisrael and everybody's just, we're so used to it. We go to Eretz Yisrael and it's just like, yeah, it's just like anything else, you know? You just get a ticket, you get a cheap ticket for $650 or $750, and you're just like, yeah, you just hop on a plane and you get on over there. A mole, years ago, it was a schus to go to Eretz Yisrael. And I'm not knocking against anybody who goes to Eretz Yisrael, especially you, right? I'm not knocking against anybody who makes Aliyah or goes to Eretz Yisrael. I'm saying it used to be. You used to work on yourself to gain, to eventually be on the level to make it Eretz Yisrael. Now it's just like, yeah, if I want to go, I'll go. Like, yeah, maybe I'll go tomorrow. Maybe I'll go next week. It's not the same of what it was. So the pshat is that Yaakov Avinu was trying to tell the Shvatim, get rid of the Elohei Nechor, get rid of that mindset. Get rid of the mindset of like everything goes and I'm perfectly fine where I am. I want you to start thinking about what you want to do, start concentrating on the right things in order to go to Eretz Yisrael with the right mindset. Get rid of that Yetzer Hara, this strange God that is in your midst. And Rabbeinu Bechaya says it as well. A sin is something tameh. Staying away from sin is being tahor. And therefore, it's vihi taharu. He's telling the people, it's time to become tahor, time to get rid of this Yetzer Hara, stay away from these evil things, and that's that. And the truth is, says in Mayan HaShel Torah, this was unbelievably scary for Yaakov. He had no idea what had gotten into his kids when they just destroyed the city of Shechem. It takes a lot to murder anyone. And granted, they were angry because their sister had that happen to her, right? She had been ma'anes, and that was a terrible thing for them to do to her sister. But they just killed 600 people. These kids are 13 and 14 years old. It takes, I mean, that takes gall. That takes audacity. A lot to be able to get themselves, to bring themselves to do it and to actually do it. So Yaakov was shocked by them. He looked at them and he said, I don't know what you did over here, but something's up with you. And I'm not so sure that's good when we're going into Eretz Yisrael. You're going to go in and you're going to see people that you dislike, people that were like the people of Sodom. You're going to see people doing things that you're not going to be happy with. What are you going to do? You're just going to kill everyone? Is that what you're going to do? Everywhere you go, you get angry at somebody, you're just going to kill them? Right? That's what you're going to do? That's what he's afraid of. He's looking at his sons and he's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to deal with you guys. I don't know what to do with anything. That's what he says. Hasir l'alein echor. Start checking on yourselves. Look at yourselves. Are you really ready for this? Are you ready to go into Eretz Yisrael and see what's there for you, or are you not? And I'm fine with it if you're not. But we got to make a decision now what's going to be. To me, I think this is the most obvious pshat. It really, to me, it makes no sense to me. We all know this, but it's just, it hits you like a ton of bricks that when it just falls down in you. Yaakov Avinu was gone. He left for 14 years the Yeshiva Shem Be'Aver, and then we all know he came to Haran. How long did he work for Rachel? 7 years, and that turned out to be Leah. How long did he work again for Rachel? 7 years. It's 14 years. How long did he work for himself? 6 years altogether. So that's 20 years done, right? After the 6 years are up, he goes to Lavan. He says, I'm out. He's ready to go back to Eretz Yisrael. He's ready to go back. So he gets up and he starts going back to Eretz Yisrael. That's 20 years, right? 20 years. But he didn't get back till 22 years later. It does not take 2 years to get from Haran to Eretz Canaan. It takes over a little more than 11 days. How did it take him 2 years to get? Now, granted, he had a lot of sheep, a lot of goats, a lot of camels, a lot of kids, everything. Granted, that is true. But 11 days to 2 years makes no sense. The Pusik says he spent 18 months. He made a city called Sukkos. He made Sukkos in the summer. He made little things, huts for his animals. What was he doing? Why didn't you go straight back to Yitzchak? In fact, he missed Rivka Imenu's death. He wasn't around for Rivka Imenu's burial in Maris Machpelah because he was standing outside of Eretz Yisrael with his sheep and his cattle waiting to go in for 2 years. 2 years he's waiting out there. What's going on? And he met with Esav at the beginning of this. He didn't spend 2 years outside and then he met with Esav and then he went to Eretz Yisrael. He spent 2 years after he met up with Esav. 2 years until he went into Eretz Canaan. What's going on? I'm sorry?
Waiting for the malachim?
I don't know why you would. I don't know. No, because Vayivku b'malach Elohim, he already saw them before he met up with Esav. The malachim already came. But he waited. What's the pshat?
Transferring malachim.
I don't even know what that means. But it seems the malachim were right there. They're standing there with him. So what's pshat? The pshat is he wasn't ready. Yaakov Avinu felt he wasn't ready to go to Eretz Yisrael. He spent 2 years outside of Eretz Yisrael preparing himself. And that's what he's worried about with the Shvatim. You're not ready yet. I know we have to go, but you're not ready yet. You just destroyed an entire city. You took their spoils. There's something wrong. That's what he was trying to tell them. Hasirus Eloheinu Echor Asher B'Sochem. Get rid of all this tuma that's within you because there's nothing else we can do over here. And that, the Chassam Sofer and Toras Moshe, again, the same exact thing. He said, you got to change yourselves, change your clothing, make yourselves taller. That's the idea. And they responded by giving their father everything. It says that they even gave the little earrings, apparently, that either they were wearing earrings, or the Medrash says that the idols that they had might have been having earrings in there, whatever it is. But they got rid of everything. They changed everything about them. They changed their entire lives because they said, says the Chasam Sofer, they looked at their father and they said, you're right, we're not ready to go to Eretz Canaan. We've never been there before. We have no idea what we're up against or what it's going to be like being inside there. You're right, we're going to change completely. Then you get the Chafetz Chaim. You want a little bit of Musar, you always look at the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim says, when you see a pasuk that says, Hasiru es alayin echor, get rid of the strange gods that are amongst you, right? Make yourselves taller, change your clothing. Says the Chasam Sofer in his, the Chafetz Chaim, I'm sorry, in his Sefer Beis Yisrael, the strange gods that we have nowadays are newspapers. You gotta love it. No, you didn't see that one coming, did you? No, of course not. It is liberal newspapers, he says. Get rid of the strange gods that are in your midst to get rid of such things. How can we have such papers in his house, he says, and ask Eliyahu HaNavi to come? How can we do that? To see the evils that they're trying to bring into the world, and you're asking Eliyahu HaNavi to come into the world. Says the Chafetz Chaim, there's no way. It's like going into a mikvah with a sharetz in your hands. It's like a person is taking a bath, reading the newspaper. He says that's like going to a mikvah and holding a sharetz, a dead rat in your hands, and going down and coming up and saying, I'm tahor now. You're still holding a dead rat. You can't be tahor when you're holding a dead rat. He says that's the concept. He told everyone, the first thing that you do to prepare for Mashiach coming is get rid of the newspapers. That's what he told them. Of course, he didn't mean Mishpacha magazine. That for sure not. Or Bina. I'm sure that's not what he meant. Or Zman. The Zman is perfectly fine. All of those, no question. I'm sorry, Vos is nice. No. Come on. Computers? For sure. Are you kidding me? The Chafetz Chaim, if he was alive today, he would absolutely, he'd scream at me. He'd be like, you're giving a shir and you have a phone recording it? What is wrong with you? I'm sure. There's no question. I'd get the Gehenim look from the Chafetz Chaim right now. There's no question whatsoever. No, you don't understand, Rebbe. I'm using it for Kiddush and Tara. You're using a dead rat for Kiddush and Tara? That's what they said. The Chafetz Chaim used it that way. So stark. Rav Moshe Sternbach, the head of the Eight of Haredes in Eretz Yisrael, he says that the Chafetz Chaim meant that, of course, it's possible that the foreign gods won't influence you. You could read books and not be influenced by them. Of course you could. You could read whatever you want. But it's not about you. Nobody cares about you. You're dead to me. Says Rav Sternbach. It's your kids, right? I hate to use the Back to the Future line over here, but it's your kid. You know what I'm talking about, right? It's your kids. What's going to be over here? You keep these things in the house. Your kids will see it. There's no question they will see it. You know what happened? Last night, I was sitting. I couldn't fall asleep. So I took like one of my old, there's an old like UFO books that I have, like one of those like, you know, theories of how UFOs still exist and stuff like that. I decided I would just read it to help myself go to sleep. I was asleep within seconds. A couple seconds. I know some people use Gemara. I use like, you know, the little like theory books, whatever. It's one of those like conspiracy theory things, you know, like JFK was really an alien, like those types of things, right? So I was reading it. I come upstairs and I'm about to give my kid a bath, and my daughter says to me, Daddy, this book is awesome. I'm like, how in the world did you get that book? She's like, it was sitting right here. I decided I was going to go look at it, right? Again, it's not a problem because this wasn't the worst book in the world for her to read, right? It wasn't like there was terrible things inside there. But it's just, you got to remember, when you have kids, they see everything and they'll know everything you do. There is nothing that you're going to be able to keep from them that they won't know about. They're going to know about it. They're going to find out about it. You got to be truthful to yourself. When it comes to stuff like this, you know what's going to happen over here. That's how Rav Sternbach understands it. It's not about you. It's your kids. You're putting this in your house. You're destroying your kids by doing so. That's how he understands it. Rav Wolf in Emunas Itecha, page 112, he says it's an especially potent lesson this time of year. It's Hanukkah time. The whole point of Hanukkah was to get rid of Hellenism. The whole point of Hanukkah was to get rid of the Jews that did do all that stuff. I hate to put it this way because I know we're all guilty of this in some way, shape, or form. But the truth is, sports is exactly what we fought against on Hanukkah. It's literally what we fought against. Everything that sports stood for, the Olympics, and everything they stood for was what we said, no, we're not going to do that. We want to have Kedusha. And we really like took everything they had and we threw it out completely. The fact that they They worked out their bodies, etc. There's no question we have to be healthy. It was the line that they went too far when it comes to this. Says Amunas Yitecha, says Rav Wolfson, the strange gods from within us are all other influences that are convincing us or so we're so into that we can't get rid of, that we should be involved in Kiddusha, in Ner Mitzvah Torah Or. That's the idea of what it should be, and that's what Yaakov was telling his kids, especially at a time of Hanukkah, to get rid of the outside influences from within you so that you're able to be Kadosh. That's the concept. But let's use a more positive fashion. Let's go the opposite way. Instead of going in the negative, what you can't do, in the positive, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, the son-in-law of Rav Yashiv, says this pasuk of Yehi Taharu, making yourself tahor, is the chova of anyone in yeshiva and anybody who acts as a Jew to show themselves as a God-fearing Jew wherever they go. You have to make a Kiddush Hashem. He one time heard a story about a lifeguard at a Haifa beach that ended up becoming frum. He asked, what happened to this guy? Like, how did a Haifa lifeguard, right, end up becoming frum? So the Haifa lifeguard said, he said, it took him a while, took him a long time, but this is what happened. There were two beaches in Haifa that were sort of next to each other with a wall in between. One was a separate beach, right, and one was a mixed beach, lo aleinu, it should never be. But, right, but there was that, and there was that, right? So obviously, people going on both. So it was something that happened. The lifeguard had to leave his post for like an hour or two. Something happened, and he went out, right? So the lifeguard went. He came back, right? And there obviously were a lot of people that ended up coming to the beach. This was a paid-only beach. You have to pay in order to get in. There were a lot of people that snuck in while the lifeguard wasn't on duty, while the lifeguard wasn't there to be able to take the money and everything. He said there was a group of yeshiva bachurim of over 30 guys who had come, obviously, to the separate beach, right? Who went up to the lifeguard, obviously. They went up to the lifeguard and they paid him, even though they had been there for an hour and a half, whatever it was, they made sure to pay him as soon as he came back on duty. And he started watching them. And then he watched them some more. And then he watched them even more. So I'm sure he was pulled by the other sights at the other beach. But he started being pulled to look at them. And he was watching how they were playing, how they were acting. And as time went on, he said, you know what? I decided I want to be like those guys. That's what I want to be like. I don't want to be like this. I want to be like that. And he decided he was going to become frum. I don't know if he kept his job. It's an interesting job to keep. But who knows? Maybe avodasa b'kach. Technically, it's mutter. Right? But you end up going. That's that. I'll tell you another story. I went to Best Buy 2 weeks ago in order to buy a recorder. It was a big failure because I bought the wrong one. And I went back and I bought another recorder and it was a wrong one. It was good times. So either way, but I went there and when I stood in line in order to get this recorder, I'm standing in line and there was a long line and I was the second one right after the person who was there, but it was taking a long time. This guy was ordering, so I don't know what it was. It was taking a long time. So three people behind me, a guy turned to the Best Buy manager and said, hey, can you get another guy to open up another register? He's like, yeah. So he calls up, he's like, another guy at the register. Yeah. So the guy came in like a couple seconds later, said, I'll take the next guy in line. So I'm like, okay. So I take my stuff and I start going over there. This guy, who's three people behind me, who's also a frum Jew, goes right in front of me and says, I called the guy, I go first. So I'm like I have no problem with that big guy, but like, you know, just, he said the next person in line, I have been waiting in line for about 7 minutes now. You just got into line when you called the guy. So the guy said, doesn't matter. I called it. I get to go first. So the guy behind like looked at me and he's like, I said you, so you can come first. So I look at the guy and I'm like, Nebuch, right? So I'm like, all right, you go first. Of course, the guy has like 700 things, right? Puts them on top, right? And he turns back to me and he tries as he's going. And of course, by the way, in the other line, everybody starts flying through. Everybody who was behind me starts flying through. And I'm standing there, right? And I'm standing and I'm looking at this guy and the guy turns back to me and he's like, I did call him first. That's the reason why I went in front of you. I'm like, seriously. Seriously, that's what it is? So the guy turned to me and he's like, you guys are in the same religion, right? That's what the guy behind the counter said to me. You guys are in the same religion, right? So I'm like, I'm not sure. Not positive. I know what I am. I'm not so sure. It's a different world. It's a different world. I'm sorry?
Did you really say that out loud?
No, but it was really good after the fact. Yes, I said it out loud. Come on, Paul, how much did you know me, right? What? No, the other guy had left. I wouldn't say it in front of the guy.
Yes, you would.
Yeah, I probably did. The truth is, you know what's funny? The guy was, I've seen him three times since then over the past week and a half, right? Three times since then. Yeah, no. What? No. No, but he came, he was at Yeshiva the other day. He came to Yeshiva the other day and I saw him. I'm like, hey, it was that guy. And then afterward, I saw him at a Shiva house, unfortunately, but I saw him at a Shiva house and I was like, hey. And then I saw him driving the other day. I was like driving right next to him. I'm like, hey. Worked out well. It was good times. Either way, I know that I'm going to see this guy every day for the rest of my life. That's just going to happen. It's all good. It's perfectly fine. But that's the idea. Anyone who is in yeshiva, if you wear a kippah, if you have tzitzis out, if you have a big nose, you have a chiyuv to show everyone what it means to be a Jew. That's the concept. That's the idea over here. That's the concept of Yitaharu. So instead of going in the negative fashion, what we have to stay away from, in the positive fashion, the way to go around, this is the idea of to make yourself tahor in that idea. That's the idea. Now, regarding the washing and changing the clothing, the Ibn Ezra says, this teaches, when you go somewhere to daven, interesting Ibn Ezra doesn't do this. When you go somewhere to daven, in a place that's made for everyone to daven together, you have to have a clean body and wear special clean clothing. You cannot go to shul wearing schmutzy work clothing or something that you would wear to a party or whatever it is. You got to go in looking nice. You can't smell like a non-rose. You got to smell good. You got to look. When you're going into daven, it should be something that should be special for you. And we learn it from here. Why? Because the pasuk says, it says, "Hechlifu simlo seichem." You should change your clothing. And the next pasuk is, because we're going to go up to Beis El. We're going to go into Beis El, meaning we're going to a house of God, so to speak. That's the Baal HaTurim over here. He says, the hint to the Gemara on Shabbos, Daf Yud, that you should wear proper clothing when davening. Obviously, that's one of the makors for a person wearing a gartel, a special Shabbos clothing, for davening clothing. Truth is, I don't even think that's necessary. I'm very into people wearing a jacket or something a little bit more chashev for davening. I think that's really, really good. Not that, again, if it's a jacket that's all frayed and it has like little marks over here and like a little, you know, like sweat marks on it, obviously that's not what you should be wearing for davening. But to have a special jacket just for davening or something that you just use for davening itself, obviously that's a great idea. It's something that's awesome. Why not do something like that? That's the concept of here. Torah Tamima says, really, we learn it from Amos. And Perek Dalet says, Hakon likras Elokecha Yisrael. Prepare to meet your God, Yisrael. When you're going to go daven in front of your God, prepare yourself. Get yourself ready for it. Make sure that you're wearing the proper clothing. We learn it really from the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen, when he did Shumas Edeshen and he cleaned out the ashes, he wouldn't wear that clothing to serve in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You don't wear the same clothing to cook the food as you do when you eat at a party. You got to change your clothing before you start something like this. That's the idea of where we change the clothing. But it's idea like this. There we learned that you have to change your clothing. Here we learn that it has to be special and clean clothing. It has to be good clothing that you're going to change into. That's the concept over here. Meshech Chochma says, it could be they wore shatnas outside of Eretz Yisrael. Because remember, according to the Ramban, they didn't keep mitzvos outside of Eretz Yisrael. So maybe they wore shatnas outside of Eretz Yisrael, and now they had to change to get rid of the shatnas. The Chassam Sofer, this is a brilliant pshat. The Hasidim wear non-Jewish clothing. You know that, right? This is not Hasidish clothing. Although, you know, Rabbi Ephraim Tursky definitely wears special clothes. That's not non-Jewish clothing. That's something total. I've never seen any clothing like that before. But it comes from the Polish garb that they wore 300 years ago, right? That's what the people wore. So what's pshat? Why all of a sudden does that become Jewish clothing, so to speak? And the answer is because if you're living among that nation and you're wearing what that nation is wearing, you're right, that's wearing non-Jewish clothing. The Hasidim only wore the garb that was worn by the Polish, you know, I'd say the noblemen. They started wearing that garb when they stopped wearing it. They started wearing this clothing after they stopped wearing it. And the whole point is not that they're trying to be like the Goyim. They're only trying to stay away from the non-Jews to wear special clothing when they get away from it. The Jews took Egyptian clothing out of Mitzrayim. People, wait a second. Wasn't that one of the five things that they did that they never got? They never changed their name. They never changed their language. They didn't do Avodah Zarah, they didn't have Lashon Hara, and they didn't change their clothing. So what are you doing taking Egyptian clothing out of Mitzrayim, smalos, and God promised them that they would get clothing getting out of Mitzrayim? Because the pshat is, in Egypt, they wouldn't wear Egyptian clothing. When they left Egypt, they would, to remind themselves of what happened when they were in Mitzrayim. They wore specific that type of clothing. So here's what happened, says Chassam Sofer. When they were living in the city of Shechem after they destroyed the city of Shechem, when they were living in Shechem, and there was no other people around because everybody was dead, then they wore Shechem clothing. They wore the non-Jewish clothing of the people there. But when they're going into Eretz Yisrael and there are other non-Jews that were around there, the other people that were going to be there who were going to be wearing that clothing, said Yaakov, you can't wear the clothing anymore. You got to be separate. You have to look distinct. You have to look as a different person than the others. So then they changed their clothing from the non-Jewish clothing into the Jewish clothing, into whatever clothing they had that made them different from everybody else. I don't know what they wore. I'm assuming a robe of some sort. But they did something that made them a little bit different. The last thing I'm going to say is that there's a yud missing in the word hasiru. It should be spelled hey samach yud resh vav, but it's spelled hey samach resh vav. And the reason why is because the gods and the images that Yaakovinu hid underneath that tree were all images which fooled the 10 Shvatim into worshipping Avodah Zarah. Yeravam ben Nevat's Egel Azov came from those images that were underneath. He made their own Egel Azov, not the Egel Azov by Parsh Kisisa, but later on. That was what was by Yeravam ben Nevat. The Pesel Micha came from these types of ideas. So the Yud is missing to stand for the Yud Shvatim being lost on account of these things. And it tells you another thing over here. It's an indictment. His thought process might be that these items weren't truly forbidden. They were batel. It wasn't so bad, so he hid them in the ground, and he didn't get rid of them completely. Because he did that, and he didn't get rid of them completely, even if he had good reasons for it. He might have had good reasons. I'm afraid of the people coming after us, whatever it was. It doesn't matter. This caused the Shvatim later on to sin. That's a problem. That's something you have to think about. Whenever you go somewhere, you just have to remember that whatever you leave as a legacy, that's what your kids, your grandchildren, they're going to take from you. Yaakov Avinu, not getting rid of the Avodah Zarah completely, left Avodah Zarah for his great-great-great-grandkids. And it was terrible for his great-grandkids because of what they did. 10 tribes were lost because of this error of Yaakov Avinu, if you can call it an error. That's the concept of what we're learning over here. So very quickly, what we did was we went through Elohe Anichor, explained what it was, went through the Ibn Ezra, the Rav Hirsch, Ksav HaKabbalah, went through the Sforno, the Ramban, saying that it was batel completely, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, what the Shvatim had. We asked, why didn't you do this before? We had an amazing Igra Dekala of how things changed, that a person reaches higher Madregas, it's different. We went through the Ksav Sof, the Malbim, etc., about thinking yourself through the Chavetz Chaim, saying the strange gods were the newspapers, Rav Sternbach, the Rav Wolfson, Rav Yitzhak Zilberstein, that you are always supposed to be Tohor, no matter where you go. And we ended with the changing the clothing and the different ideas that we had over there. Shkoyach, guys. Have a great Shabbat.